Hey everyone, welcome to Unbox, the podcast where we unpack the future of education with inspiring stories and innovative solutions. Today, for our very first episode, the premiere, we've got a real mover and doer and shaker from our Helsingborg community, Dmitry Oleshko. He is everything but average. He's an entrepreneur, a dedicated father, a tech geek, and a passionate activist for change. Did we mention he's also a ninja? And that's definitely something that we're going to explore later in the podcast. And Dmitry doesn't just talk the talk, he walks the walk with endless energy and an inner drive for thinking outside the box. Whether he is at Måndagsrörelsen and speaking up for Ukraine, or coding with kids at Mind Park here in Helsingborg, or supporting his daughters at ice hockey and the Scouts, he is always making waves. How does he do it all? The future of education is calling, and Dmitry is there to lead change. This conversation is about to kick off, and trust me, you won't want to miss it. Let's see what Dmitry has to say about shaping the future of education. Let's go. Okay, as we are enjoying our coffee, our dear sponsors, Backhouse, we kick this off with the easiest of questions, maybe. What life experiences and influences have molded you into the person that you are today?
I think moving to Sweden is one of the experiences that gave me a chance of like rethink my stuff, because I moved quite late, when I was 17, because I already built my social life back in Ukraine. I was visiting Sweden like as a tourist for a couple of months, and then I decided I can stay here for a little bit longer, and then it's like starting this new life, this social new social connections and understanding the culture and everything. That's, I think, formed me as more agile and adaptable person. Not everybody thinks like me. They're like different. There's a difference in our mindset.
Yeah, for sure. And have you always been this courageous?
Yeah. I born in a city where we have quite a lot of different nationalities, which means that already in the beginning of your life, you're starting to like interact with people that like maybe not celebrating Christmas the same way, or New Year. Already from the beginning, it was like, wow, the world is much more complicated than the things that my parents do or my grandparents is doing. And then when I moved abroad, I just could open up and understood that, like, wow, it's for real. It's not only like on paper or just talking to people. It's for real. It's different. What type of food you eat, or how do you interact? What is okay to do and what's not okay to do? That's what's impacting me quite a lot.
I'm thinking, like, because both Emily and I, we work in an international school, and these are topics that we are talking about and experiencing every day. Like, you have to be more agile, you have to find ways. And I'm also thinking about your mindset, because you're a very driven person, one of the most driven person I've actually met. And you have this sort of entrepreneurial mindset, and we want to connect that to the world of school. How would you say that your mindset can influence the way you look at the future of school? And secondly, how do you see that an entrepreneurial way of thinking can help the way we do things in schools?
First of all, it's a really nice question, because back in a couple of years ago, I already set a goal that until 2030, I will change the school system in Sweden. So that's why I'm quite often at Almedalen and going to different conferences and also been working in different schools. Maybe sometimes just giving some lectures about programming or entrepreneurship or something. Everything from like those like small kids to grown-ups at Chromebooks, and not just to talk, but see what can be practically done in school. But because it's more interesting, because of course theoretically, if you read the schoolwork, its papers, everything looks really nice. It's really nice designed papers, and it's written in a nice way. But when you go and meet reality, you understand that reality is not really connected to those papers 100%.
Yes.
And that's why it's really important to a little bit be more agile, to be able to adapt those things. And I think when I like read all those schoolwork, its frameworks, I see that they really would like to try to adapt.
Yes.
But the next question is, who will adapt that? And it's teachers. Are they ready? Are they prepared to adapt? Do we have enough digital systems to be able to give them possibilities to adapt? Because at the end of the day, you still need to do the same work as every teacher in Sweden is doing, is to put some degree on some subject and put it in some school matrix that nobody understands, and then you need to explain it, and that's how it's done. But it shouldn't be done like that, because mm-hmm. you need to focus on those individual students that have their dreams, they have some limitations and also some talents. And it's impossible to just describe in one paper or one degree, because if somebody likes music, they should grow in that. If somebody likes programming, the teachers should be more into the inspiring and teaching kids and grown-ups as well to explore themselves. So they like, okay, you need to test whatever subjects it is, but then you can anytime say, I already tested it, but maybe it's not for me. I want something else. So it should mm-hmm. be more customized. And mm-hmm. But that it's impossible to do without the mindset of all those teachers that are teaching.
Yes.
Because reality is, you have students that meet everyday teachers, and it's where during that interaction everything is done. That interaction should be more agile, and mm-hmm. that's why teachers need to be a little bit more agile, and to be able to do it, they need to be maybe a little bit re-educated, but also a nice framework.
There is so much to unpack there, isn't it? First of all, you are saying the word agile, which we are using a lot as well, and how to make school more agile, how to have school leaders to structure school more agile, and to give the green card to teachers to be more agile. And actually, there is something that we are talking a lot about, and that is collaboration between teachers, and especially when the learners becomes, when they grow older and go to high school. And you are also saying something about inspiration, because we are talking about learner guides, like holding the space.
And also as learner guides, that we see the students' passions, just like you were saying. That's the most important thing.
Mm. Because I know you love technology, and we are very much into ed tech, even though we may be not able to express that so much because we are in a school, there is budgets. But the ed tech that exists, it already exists. We could do individualized learning tomorrow. So the resources are there. But we think that also there is this structure that needs to be changed. And we think that school as a structure is human made. And if it's human made, we can change it as well.
Why do you think the main reasons for us not being there yet? What is the main reasons for that?
We are not, we as a people, we are not used to change. We don't like to to be changed. And it's important to understand, because usually something needs to be done in your life to be able to change. For example, if I'm not exercising, I will not go and exercise. Something needs to be happened. Unfortunately, it's not that like we're sitting there and think, let's do something new. We are really comfortable in whatever framework we are using, or whatever city we are living, whatever vehicle we are using. It's part of us, because to be able to change, maybe during that process, you will realize that somebody else will take your job or your whatever position, and then you will lose it. Mm-hmm. Are you able to accept it?
Yeah. We're wondering a little bit why so many things are changing in such a rapid pace, but then school is still more or less the same as it was back in the 1800s.
First of all, not all the things are changing. We're still driving the cars. Yeah. We still, like for the 100 years, we didn't change so much. We're still living in the same types of buildings. We already realized that it's possible to live more mobile and everything, but we're not changing it because we want to have a lot of square meters that nobody using during the days for ourselves. So what you see is some of the part of society is changing quite a lot. For example, digitalization. Now our kids have access to any type of information and can write any type of essays without even doing something, because the robots can do it for them. And we're like, what? we was thinking that ChatGPT will be able to help you learn, but not write your essay, and you will even don't understand, because we realize that some of the part of the system maybe is boring. Because we didn't adapt school system to whatever needs. So we shouldn't like stress ourselves and say everything is changing rapidly. There are a lot of other things need to be changed rapidly. But let's start with the school system, because it's really important, because that can adapt quite a lot of new things. For example, without Swedish school system, I wouldn't be environment friendly, I can guarantee, because I would never sort the rubbish in the different things. Wow. It's because my kids was screaming at me and saying, like, what are you doing? They convinced me. They said that it's
fantastic.
Important. So nowadays when I sort the rubbish, I look behind my back to see if nobody my kids there. And I still do that because I do it for them, not for me. And I still have this conservative mindset, why should we do that? As that's maybe a funny example, but we have hundreds of those examples.
Yeah.
And the school system, if the school system is right, is correct set up, we can change quite a lot of mindsets.
Yes.
Like how we're living,
the
how
right
we're moving, how we feel, our well-being, for example.
Let's talk about well-being. There is so much to unbox with you, Dimitri. So how many hours do we have? We see that you are deeply engaged in fatherhood and with your daughter scouting and hockey. And we know also that you are involved with Wellbify. And so how does those both experiences, both with adults and your own kids, have an impact on you when you think about a more holistic education for kids, like more well-being in schools?
It's really nice. Just to define, Wellbify is a startup which measure how you feel at your workplace by using standard things that already been done for like 10 or 20 years of like questioning people about like, but how do you feel? What's your, like, do you understand what you're doing during your work and all those things? And then gathering that information and give a picture of like, but how your employers feel at your company. But that can be implemented everywhere because in my philosophy, it's really important physical. You need to be like exercising somehow. You can go for a walk and everything, but also be social. It's important for me that my kids are social. And nowadays it's much more important because computers and mobile phones is taking over. And it's not strange because game developers understand how to interact with the kids, how to give them something that they want. It's grown-ups don't usually understand how to interact with the kids.
Yeah, it's like this dopamine. They are on a dopamine rush.
Yeah.
Going from one to the other.
And that's why I am involved in different societies and try to involve my kids of like, yeah, going with scouts sometimes or playing hockey just so... I compete against those mobile companies. Even I'm a developer by myself and do a lot of things, but I know that if you're not mature enough, it can hurt you more than can give you possibilities. Because nowadays, unfortunately, we're using those phones not 100% correct yet.
I want to talk a little bit about your makerspace. You're a pioneer in Helsingborg. And makerspace, we want to tell our listeners, it's what we in school language would call STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math and arts. We want to ask you, in what ways do you think makerspaces contribute to essential skills like creativity? And design thinking skills, thinking skills, and problem solving.
First of all, I'm a believer that any type of education should be more practical because it's really important. Learning by doing, it's one of the philosophies that I have. And to be able to do it practically, you need to have a space where you can do this stuff or whatever things. Maybe you see on TikTok, on YouTube, or whatever, but is it possible to do that? And you should have all the tools available. And that's why I involved with Helsingborg's Makerspace. I'm one of the co-creator of that organization. And I also part of Makers of Sweden. It's an organization of all makerspaces here in Sweden. It's important both for grown-ups, but also for kids to have access to the tools, to the rooms, and so they can express themselves. Not in the way of like, okay, between this hour and that hour, you should be artistic. They should be able to do it anytime.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's about also like creativity. If you are inspired by creativity in makerspace, then that creativity can also have the potential to make you more creative in other areas in your life. I want to ask something more about the makerspace, because we are also talking about hands-on learning experiences, but we are also talking about project-based learning. And this is something that we are passionate about. So when a young person can see the purpose, the meaning, can connect it to their own life, then we believe that that child or that learner will learn more deep, more breath, and remember actually what they are learning. Can you share some experiences when you think that, wow, this happened in front of my eyes? And
it's more about this, the other projects that I'm running. Mm-hmm. It's also like connected to Makerspace. It's Coder Dojo.
Yes.
Where we teach kids how to program. But then we're using different types of robots so they can compete with each other. And then it's starting that experience that you are talking about, because then we show the robots, we show how to program, and then we say, but to be able to compete, your robot should do, for example, to move those things in that way. And that's quite a complicated task, to be honest, but we never say that it's complicated, and they're starting to solve it, and it's taking quite a lot of time. And what we see when they like it a little bit, when they have this passion about like being a little bit engineering, they're putting so much time. So reading some papers, watching YouTube for this like 200 hours and coming back with this cool solutions.
Yes.
Sometimes I am more like experienced programmer, be passionate about like, but how this 12 years old kid could figure out this logistically almost impossible thing without understanding how algorithms work, without going this data structure course on a high school level or like university level, and this 12-year-old sort of kids solve those things because they have interest, because they put it everything. And of course, they're using internet, because everything on internet, you can build whatever. Okay. And they're learning by themselves.
Yes.
And you as a teacher don't need to be there, because they do it by themselves.
I want to ask you, related to this famous saying is, kids do as grown-ups do, they don't do what grown-ups say. What do you think about that saying?
Yes, of course, but that is also a most important thing. You shouldn't push the kids. For example, in my opinion, or in my case, my kids don't want to be a programmer. that's where I learned that I need to listen for them, because, of course, they do whatever you do. They're quite active as me, but they're choosing their own way of being active, because when they was small, I was buying a lot of robots and a lot of programming, but sometimes it was too much. We was like going to the courses of programming and like doing that thing. So none of my kids won't be a programmer. Some of them are really good, so they know how to do these things, but they want to keep a distance. For example, that's why they're involved in hockey. I don't have any relationship with hockey. I don't know nothing about hockey. I didn't know nothing about hockey for 4 years ago, and still don't know so much about the game, about the but they are involved in that, and that is important to understand. You need to inspire kids, but then you need to listen so they do their own way.
Yes.
And not too much. And if you compare it to the schools, we demand them to deliver quite a lot of things on different subjects. And some subjects maybe they are passionate about and they want to do it, but some subjects they are not liking right now, maybe. I don't know. But the school is not really agile enough to like, for example, say, but okay, this subject you don't need to read this month, for example. Same with when we are trying to inspire our kids with doing the same. Let them test and experiment, but you choose, but I support you. If they would say stop on hockey, no problem. Choose whatever things you want. And it's important for us parents to understand, because you should be there just to support them of experimenting in chasing their own dreams, whatever dreams are there.
I'm thinking of a school in Spain, in Barcelona. We're going to interview the co-founder of a school called Learn Life. They have created a place where students learn from the passion. It's more individualized. So we also want with those series to inspire others in those areas. Shall we stay with hockey for a little while?
Yeah, I wanted to ask. I heard you saying that you don't really have a connection or a passion about hockey, but I'm going to take a wild guess and say that your involvement in hockey, it reflects or mirrors your commitment to teamwork. So why is teamwork crucial in education?
Basically, to be able as a kid to grow and then get into the society, you need to understand how to cooperate with different organization, people, and everything. So the teamwork is most important thing. We usually call it social life or socialization, because if you're not active, if you're not coming and give that energy to the to that room or to that those gathered people, you're taking the energy, and then you're on a minus. And it's important that you are a little bit more into this plus, where you give a little bit energy, and then you can move in your way during that. So this social part and teamwork, it's important.
Yeah.
How do you encourage your own kids? Or like, if your daughter has a really bad day at hockey or she's lost a game and she's upset, what do you, how do you talk to her? How do you encourage her?
I'm not at all engaged in the that part because it's her own thing. So okay. I even don't know when they win or lose the matches because it's their own thing. If she wants to talk and say that was the trainer was really bad or that girl was, yeah, I can listen to that. But I'm not monitoring what score was there and like was it good or bad game or whatever things. You hungry or not?
Yeah.
That's if you
great.
Want to listen for your music or to TikTok, do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I learned when I was pushing programming into my kids, that you shouldn't be engaged too much. Mm. You should give them possibilities to be engaged in whatever mm-hmm. things there are, but you shouldn't be there all the time. Or you should be present there.
Mm-hmm.
So if they hurt themselves or if they need you, mm-hmm. They can easily find you mm-hmm. and connect to you. Mm-hmm. But you shouldn't be too much there.
Mm-hmm.
Because we at our school, you mm-hmm. actually work a lot on growth mindset.
Yes. So how is your sort of growth mindset talk with yourself? Like, how do you encourage yourself if you meet the challenge?
It's an interesting question. First of all, is identify do I need to solve it or not? It's important for me. Some of the challenges, like, okay, it's not a challenge because I don't have this like too much feelings. It's more for me a list of the things that need to be sorted. Either it's conflict or building new company or finding new partner for that company or whatever things. For me, it's more like I'm more into this project management PMO thing where I list all those things and then identify how important it is and what prioritization should I do there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when I come to the point, I need to focus and solve it. So I don't put a lot of feelings on any stuff, which mm-hmm. means that it's easy for me to switch between the different things
mm-hmm.
When you're not really feel mm-hmm. like, okay, if I'm not solving it, mm-hmm. I will die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more into that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I try visualize for like 1 week up front, like what types of challenges are there and what type of challenges do I think I will come? Because it's also important with risk management mm-hmm. to think like, but
scenario
during planning. this week, probably there will be a conflict between me and my daughter
mm-hmm.
Because I feel it. Okay, mm-hmm. perfect. I prepared with like maybe 3 hours of dedicated time
mm-hmm.
That I will have a conflict. So I mm-hmm. maybe I should prioritize to be here
mm-hmm.
to get this conflict
mm-hmm.
and then we talked about
mm-hmm.
that, then flying to Stockholm and, mm-hmm. and solve another mm-hmm. thing.
I just admire you because where do you find all this time? I struggle to find time for my kids, for my husband, for everything around myself. Where do you find the time?
It's a lot of, first of all, prioritization. The second one, I delegate quite a lot of things. And the third one, I engage a lot of things. So if you talk to my kids, you will realize that sometimes they are boring because they're like, okay, we needed to go with my dad to Berlin to solve some problem. Of course, we visit some museum, but we are bored about those boring people that you need to meet for 1 hour and do the stuff.
Yeah.
Because I do a lot of those combination of like, okay, we go to Almedalen for vacation, but it's not vacation. You will need to read about those people that you will meet, and then you
it.
Can do whatever you think you want to do, but still you need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do my stuff, and also we can be together. So,
mm-hmm.
so a little bit, I'm pushing them to, for example, with my kids, to be part of those like strange projects that I have, and I think it's important for them. But that's how I I have a lot of time because I'm together with them, but not at the same time all the time with them. So, so that is like what's important. For example, with hockey, of course I'm there, I'm driving there, but I'm more interested about the strategical thinking. So that's why I'm involved in the board of directors of hockey. So I can put my time on like when I'm in during those like trainings to see like how strategically can we move this big club to a next level, and not going and watching a specific game because I'm not really interested in a game as a game, but I'm more interested about this development. How I cannot understand how can kids choose to be like 1 or 2 hours in this cold ice rink and still have fun and some trainers are like screaming at them and saying you should run or do this. It's crazy, but I'm passionate and they want to come and on time and everything. So it's like, wow. If they want to do it, do it.
It's their passion. We have just a few questions left. We would like to pick your brain a little bit about how educators, or should I say school leaderships and principals, how new technology could be more accessible for schools, for teachers, because we are also seeing that students get bored really quickly, and we want to engage them. We want learning to be more immersive, like blended. So yeah, let's talk about technology in school.
And you mentioned already that there are a lot of technological solutions of making the education more individual. But in my opinion, we are not using digitalization in the right way. So we need to kill old solutions. Because if we still keep old solutions and put on top of them a new solutions, it will not be a really good mix. Because we are not trying to do a salad. We are trying to do something like that we can use it. Because nowadays, when I meet teachers of my kids, they're sitting in front of the school software for 45 minutes and only 15 minutes they later interact because they need to document everything there. And it shouldn't work like that. We have a lot of things that can help us interact, document everything, and put everything in those boring systems. So we should do system much more fun and more for the students and for the teachers. So it's important, but it's difficult because then the principal of the school that will decide to move forward need to kill all those old things. And I don't think there are principal in Sweden that will say, okay, we will not have a school soft. We will do everything in Excel right now and just to start to experiment with the other system, because that's how it should done. It shouldn't be done in this big, strange monolith system. It should be small, cool stuff that we are experimenting and saying, this working, this not working, this working, that not working.
And that's so exciting that you say that, because we have a saying between us that we say, to be able to learn, you have to unlearn something. But we have one final question for you. And that is, what does it really mean to be a ninja?
It means that you need to have a real mindset. You need to have less feelings, because as a ninja, you just show up and do the stuff and then you disappear. And that demands quite a lot of, because as a person, of course, you want to take some credits for whatever things you do, but you shouldn't, because it's not you, it's the team should take the credit for that things. And the second one, you should be able to adapt to any types of meetings and understand really quickly what's going on there. So that's what I'm doing for living. I'm just showing up in a different places, in a different teams, in a different organization, and do the change and then disappear there and see that change are kept there, or at least they understand, if they don't want to keep it, why they shouldn't keep it. That's a ninja work.
I love it. I can really see it visually in front of me. How you show up
dressed in black,
come with your questions and insights, and then just disappears.
Yeah. But when you visualize, you shouldn't see me as a real ninja. You should see me as a Pokemon.
Pokemon. Like, yeah,
because it should be fun. It's not this unsecure, you feel not comfortable that somebody showing up and maybe can kill you. It's at least you, when I go in the Pokemon
Pikachu
things and coming in and then do something and then disappear. It should be like, oh, but it was fun and stuff. That's what I'm trying to get. So it shouldn't be even called Ninja, but I think if I will write Pokemon, they will people not understand. But it's the same feeling that I would like to do in the different meetings where I show up and if something is wrong, it's Dimitri's fault. And then everything is solved at the end of the day.
You know, I'm thinking about there is so much to unbox. We are going to have a whole episode about taking fun seriously as well. That is like, it's also scientifically proven with fun that you become more creative, more collaborative, and more communicative when you have fun together. And wow, you can move mountains with that. Thank you so much, Dimitri, for joining us and for kicking off this newborn podcast. We hope and believe that conversations like the one we just had have the power to transform the future and the future of education.
The future doesn't just happen. We are the writers of it. We are here to write an inclusive, healthy, and sustainable future together. And to our listeners, we hope you found Dimitri's real talk, real Pokemon talk, inspiring and thought-provoking. Remember, the adventure of learning never ends. Stay curious, stay adventurous, and keep unboxing the world around you.